Welcome to Shollycast, the podcast all about Lolly and Shota, including Not Safe for Work. Shollycast is hosted by me, Hydro, and Dr. X. Together, we make up Team CyberHex. We're the developers of Insexual Awakening 1 and 2, an adult visual novel game where you play as a Shota protagonist and get into all sorts of wholesome, naughty fun with friends and family. I primarily work on the writing and planning for our games, and Dr. X works on the programming, artwork, and additional writing. If you'd like to play Insexual Awakening 1 or 2, you can download them at our official Barag at barag.net/cyberhex. You can also check out our continued development progress of Insexual Awakening 2 at our Subscribestar, which is subscribestar.adult/cyberhex.
Welcome back to another episode of Shollycast. I'm with Hydro, my co-host, and today we will be doing a community-focused episode where we'll be talking about topics suggested by the community.
Yes, and what we did was, is a couple months ago, we had asked you in the Lolly Shota community, and this could be anyone that is either listening to our podcast or anyone who is just a big fan of the Lolly and Shota community, anything that you might have been working on as a project that you're working on, or questions or suggestions that you wanted Dr. X and I to talk about in this episode, and also anything that might not be necessarily Lolly or Shota related, because the whole point is to kind of get to know the Lolly Shota community more. So if you wanted to talk about any kind of manga, anime, TV shows, video games, also words of affirmation like solidarity or positivity or advice to other Lolly Shota fans or creators, or any kind of goals or dreams you might have that maybe you want to eventually make like a visual novel like Insexual Awakening like Dr. X and I did, or whatever it could be, or anything like any good news in your life. So it really could be anything. So we got a lot of great responses and a lot of cool stuff, and that's what this episode is going to be focused on. So you're going to see different messages and really cool stuff from the community members that have submitted to us.
Yep. So we can just get right into it. So the first question we'll talk about is from Not Drained Yet, and they ask, are there any Shota involved pairings you would never ship no matter what?
That's a good question. Can you think of anything, Dr. X, off the top of your head?
This reminds me of Thray on ATF. I think it was kind of asking a similar question, like if there's any Lolly, it was specifically if there's any Lolly you would never like loot or something like that. And I was just thinking like no. You know what I mean? Because I know, but you know, some people they feel like for certain characters they looting them might like tarnishes their innocence or something like that. Personally, I don't feel that way. And I get the impression that this question might be kind of related to that attitude in a way.
And the thing is I understand that feeling, because it's kind of funny. Like, there have been cases where, like, I've really enjoyed, like, a particular anime, for example, that might have, like, not necessarily a Lolly or Shota character, but just a character in general that I really, like, am attached to or like, enjoy in the show. And the funny thing that happens is I generally don't look up, like, any kind of porn of that character until, like, well after I've concluded the show. it's like this really funny, like, and I don't even know the reason why I do it. But I remember Kana for a while from Dragon Maid. I remember there was that whole kind of meme going around for a while where it was like, don't lewd the dragon Lolly. And all I could think of every time was just like, why not? Why not? She's one of the best Lollies to lewd.
Yep.
I will definitely lewd her, and I will look up lewd art of her. So yeah, I'm with you, Dr. X. I can't really think of any Shota pairing. Well, in the case of our presentation, you have it as parring, so you'll have to correct that. But
well, hey, I just copied and pasted what I was given, all right?
Oh yeah, fair enough.
It's authentic.
Yes, that's see, that shows we haven't made any special edits. Yeah, I'm with you, Dr. X. I can't think of any examples.
What I'm wondering about this question is it like, because obviously there's ships that we don't ship, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying there, yes.
So I'm not fully sure what the question is asking. Maybe they're talking about like certain character dynamics that you would never ship. That possibly might be it. Also to touch on that what you're speaking about before, and you're mentioning that how you weren't completely sure why you don't look at an SFW or whatever for certain characters, like while you're watching something. My guess is that you don't want to like influencing your perception of the show or the character. Is that it? You think that's it?
I think subconsciously that might be it. Yes. You know, like, for example, I haven't looked up any 02 porn, which for those of you who don't know, that's the Darling in the Franxx character. Well, like, I haven't looked up any of that. Like, the only time I ever have, like, was either accidentally before I had seen the show. But during the show, I did not.
I think that makes a lot of sense. But like you said, like, after a little while after you've watched the show or read the manga, whatever it is, then it's a little easier to digest what you end up seeing in the Wild West of the internet.
Yeah, like here's like a good example I can think of. Like, okay, like Lokua and Chota from Dragon Maid, right? Like if I was like a diehard fan of that pairing, which there are some members on our community that are a big fan of that pairing,
especially a certain one.
Yes, and that person did submit something.
Yes.
for this, but which we will get to. But anyway, like I could totally see being like refusing to look up any artwork where it's Shota and another character, or a character that's not Lokua. Like that would almost kind of be like, no, I gotta stay true to the one true pairing while I'm watching this show.
I guess to answer this question about Shota involved pairings in a more general sense, I mean, there's certain dynamics that I'm not really a big fan of, I guess. Though it's not necessarily tied to Shota in particular. Like, personally, I'm not really big into the rivals or enemies who secretly want to fuck each other thing. Personally, not into that.
Yeah.
So that would be like Deku and Bakugo. Not really into that kind of dynamic personally. But in terms of like something Shota specific, it's hard to really think of something, though. I guess like with when it comes to the Shota and Loli characters, I suppose like a lot of people they really don't want them to be involved in some kind of abuse or like violence or something like that. So I would say maybe I'm a little more sensitive to any kind of abuse towards a Shota or a Loli character. So I guess I would be even less interested in appearing involving a Shota or a Loli where there's some kind of like abusive mechanic in it. So yeah, that's my answer to that question.
So like if they were in like a toxic or abusive relationship, yeah, I would side with that too. I wouldn't be a fan of that.
I would feel a little worse for the Shota or Loli compared to an adult character. All right, so next question.
So from Wumbo Weeb, we have just Naoi from Fire Emblem and other Loli dragons. Well, we were talking about Kana very briefly, and you know, Dr. X being a big Fire Emblem fan, he knows about Naoi.
Yes, I do, and that is Naoi on the slide there.
How many other Loli dragons can you think of? That there's Kana, there's Naoi. I'm trying to think. I'm sure there's another one I'm forgetting.
There's more in Fire Emblem itself, so not very surprising. But what do you think of that sort of character?
I mean, I like it. I like the design. If you didn't tell me that she was a dragon, I would have not have known that from that artwork. So like I would have just seen her as just a very like cute like Loli type character who had some cool kind of like outfit basically.
they try to put a little bit of it into the design, like her hair being greenish,
Yeah, like I can notice it by looking like at her, like, for example, her bra and stuff kind of has like scales and stuff, and it's kind of looks like her cape kind of is kind of like has that dragon kind of look, and the hair, like you said. So I can definitely see it if I was observing it more carefully. But like, for example, the hearts on her belt and stuff, I'm like,
You would actually need to know before you could actually say it was a dragon lolly.
Yes.
So you could possibly make a guess from that scale bikini thing. So do you like lollies that are like the kind of like immortal or very long lived, they'll be a lolly for the rest of life better, or do you like the kind of more natural lolly, or do you like them equally?
I like them equally because you're essentially going to be watching them or looking at, you know, porn of them or whatever when they are still a lolly. I would say they're both equally fun. The only like main real differences, of course, are maturity, but a lot of times these, you know, super long long life lollies tend to still have like the personality, you know of a young like human lolly, or like a lolly that lives like a normal lifespan. So yeah, I would say equally like all of them.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that opinion. I like both kinds of lollies, where it's either a natural one or like they're like a different species, or they're under some kind of condition where they don't age into an adult physically, or maybe it takes much longer. So yeah, I'm down with those kind of characters.
And I should also point out that if they are if they are actually like a lolly dragon, as in like a dragon anthro that's a lolly, I would also like that too. That I would also enjoy that as well. Any like anthro lollies or shotas?
I haven't seen that very much. Well, I mean, I'm sure you could find it on like E621 or something.
Yes.
It just reminds me of how like non-existent male human and female anthros in the anime and stuff.
that's been a topic, man, that Dr. X and I have gotten into so much lately.
I was surprised. It basically doesn't exist.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. I mean, like, I was even like imagining the other day, if I had like millions and millions of dollars, which maybe one day I will, who knows, or maybe Dr. X and I will one day, but I literally would think about investing it into like asking like Studio Trigger or something and give them like an idea that will have that in the anime, just because it doesn't exist at all.
And not even like aliens, like, other than like what's her name from, what's that anime name again? Remember that girl with like colorful hair and she has like two tiny horns?
Yeah, the Lum is the character.
She's an alien, but like she just kind of looks like a human, differently colored hair. And so basically what I'm getting at here is that I would like to see, because they do have like romances between like human male and like an alien in anime, that being an example, but she doesn't look that different from a human. So I would like some kind of romance between a male human and a female character that isn't like just kind of like a recolored human or like a human with different ears or something like that. On the front of like female human X beast or furry or anthro character, you've definitely got more stuff, and even in the West too.
Yeah. And you know, I would even be okay with, like, while we're on the topic of like, you know, these kinds of characters, like the lolly dragon characters like Naoi and stuff, I wouldn't mind it if they even had like a female character that looks like a human like Naoi, but can turn into like either an anthro dragon or even a feral dragon. And like then they have a romantic pairing with a male human character. I would be accepting of, and it'd be kind of fun to see like how the dynamic of the human character seeing them as a dragon and yet they still want to be together and stuff. That'd be fun.
See, I actually have a pet peeve that I've recently discovered.
Oh really?
Well, I was looking up for male human and female anthro stuff. And there was one, a manga on like a Magadex or something. And it is a female dragon, like a whole ass dragon at the start, very start of the story. And then like they're like flirting, the the guy was like flirting with her or whatever, and then she turned into like a human with like dragon ears or whatever, you know, in order to like pursue the romance. I was like, man, that's boring.
Yeah, that's very boring.
Though if she doesn't like turn into a dragon during like sex or a romance, kind of boring to me, you know what I mean, a little bit, because it doesn't add much to the romance aspect if she just appears like as basically a human during that.
Yeah, like my context would actually be the opposite, where they would start off as a human, but then like you'd find out that like they were actually trying to just keep their image of being a human, but actually they're actually a true like feral dragon. So instead it does the opposite, where the human. I think that would be more fun and more interesting. Or alternatively, if the character gets like very emotional, or like, you know, if there's a romantic kind of thing, they turn back into a dragon. That would be fun. I would really like that.
That'd be a lot of fun.
And again, doesn't exist, not that I know of, with human male and female. And I'm talking about anything. Could be any kind of anthro or feral thing. That just does not exist right now.
You do see it in porn, however. That's usually the porn is like just like one off comic or whatever, and it's not. Yep. It's like a long story, and it usually doesn't get too heavy into explaining the romance, if there's any romance to begin with in it. So that's kind of what we're after, is like a more a longer romance story. And I don't mind if there's sex in it, but I want to see like the progression of the relationship and stuff.
Yes. And preferably if you can slap in some good action too, that makes it yep. That bonus points there.
All right, so next question from Smoy. Video games you played or shows you watched strictly because there was a Shota and or Loli character in it?
Can't think of any, unless they're porn games, of course. but assuming it's just like a standard video game, I would think the only example I can think of a video game would be Persona 3, though I don't think that was purely the reason why I wanted to play Persona 3, because the Persona series is great. And of course, the new one coming out doesn't even have the female character yet. So Dr. X and I were both kind of a little disappointed with the voice of the Shota character Ken in the remake. They kind of made his voice a little too mature sounding. But in terms of other video games, I can't think of any specific ones off the top of my head, but I can think of a show that I definitely watched because there was Shota and or Loli in it. Dragon Maid, of course, for both the Shota and Loli characters, Shota and Kana, and then Jobless Reincarnation, which I stopped watching as soon as he started getting older.
See, I'm not completely sure those count, because you, like, for example, like, was it just because there was a Loli and Shota for the Dragon Maid, was it, or was it because it's Loli and Shota and because there's, like, suggestive stuff in it?
That's a good point. I mean, yeah, there is suggestive stuff in it, but I think I was attracted to the fun pairing of Shota and Locua and Kana.
That's the suggestive stuff.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So I feel like if you have to add, like, if you watch something or play something because it's Shota and Loli and romance, then it's not really an example of this question. You know what I mean? Because you're adding like an extra addition condition to it.
So then would the Demon Lord of Excalibur or Demon Sword of Excalibur Academy, would that be one that we both watched because we saw there was a Shota character in it? But would that count then?
No, because we already knew it was like he was surrounded by Onesans.
I see what you're saying.
So we already knew there was some kind of more interesting added element to it, you know what I mean?
I see.
There's, if you think about it, there's plenty of shows and games or whatever that incidentally have like a Shota or Loli character in it.
Right. I see what you're saying.
For us, that's not like it's not like we're like going around watching every single anime or playing every game that has like a kid character in it. What we look for is something that adds like an extra interesting element, which could be like a romance with a Loli or Shota. Or like suggestiveness,
I see. Yes, I was misinterpreting the question a bit because I was adding those additional conditions. Yeah.
You know, I like shoujos like lollies and they're cute, but I don't think I'd watch a show or play something just because there's a cute shoujo or lolly in it.
That's a good point. Yeah,
it's not too difficult to find that. You know what I mean?
No, it's
not. What's more difficult to find is something that is adds romance or something to it.
Yes.
All right. So the next question.
So the next question, also by Smoy, is how Nintendo seems to be a shoujo lolly factory across several franchises. 100% true when it comes to Pokemon. like they always seem to add like some kind of great shoujo or lolly character every single generation or multiple. And sometimes they can just be trainer characters. I'm trying to think of, I know Legend of Zelda games have had lollies and shoujos as well. Like Princess Rudo is a good example of one I can think of. What other, I'm trying to think, do any of the Mario games have any shoujos or lollies that I can think of that aside from like Baby Mario and Baby Peach and stuff?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, and then what's another? Right, Splatoon. The Splatoon characters are definitely another example of taking like perfect like shoujo and lolly characters. I mean, I've always wanted to Splatoon all over the lolly characters in that.
Your wedding.
Yes, which I think there actually was a tournament that did have black and white ink and they realized how terrible of a mistake that was to have the white paint, the white ink, and they got rid of it like after that tournament. It was really, really funny.
That's funny.
I mean, I would say from personal experience, I would say when it came to looking up like porn of like shoujo and lolly characters, like Nintendo is like a go-to. Like if you can't find like any lolly shoujo stuff, you can always just be like, oh, wait a minute, I just got to look up Young Link, or I got to look up Malon from Legend of Zelda, or I just look up some Pokemon waifus. And it's like there's just thousands and thousands of pieces of NSFW art of them. And I wonder if maybe like, I don't know if Nintendo... Well, I'm sure Nintendo does know about that stuff, but it's like, I don't think they're necessarily influenced by it. However, I think, like, the NSFW community has kind of made the shoujo and lollies from all those franchises be, like, a staple for like, looting, basically.
They definitely have. Yeah, you do have to wonder if they're like, if they factored that in at all. Into, like, when they make characters or design characters...
I mean, if they don't, then at the very least, there's gotta be art designers or character designers that are either lollycons or shoujocons.
Probably.
That are just huge fans of designing lolly shoujo characters. Cause if there weren't, you would think that there would, you know, for example, in the Pokemon franchise that there might eventually be a time where you don't get any lollies or shoujos, which would be like a travesty if that ever happened.
Pretty sure the world would end the next day.
Yep. So yes, Smoy, I very much agree that Nintendo just pumps out a ton of great designs like all the time too. And that's what's great. And because like the Nintendo has such like is so beloved by so many people, including not NSFW artists. It's a guarantee that they will make tons and tons of artwork of all the different characters that come out. They're like the ultimate like speed of light type of stuff.
Yeah, Nintendo definitely sets itself apart compared to the other consoles. Like if I try to think of like major PlayStation franchises. They have like lots of shoujo and lolly in it. I can't really think of one off the top of my head.
Yeah, like there's probably like a few, but it's just like, you know, you can't think of them right away because they're not as common. They're not as commonplace.
Yeah, it's like you like of course like in like Final Fantasy, for example, you do have some showed in Loli characters, but it's more like incidental. Whereas in the for Nintendo games, they're definitely intentionally making these child characters.
Yeah, that's right. And they're meant to be like significantly part of the story, like Princess Ruto wanting to marry you when she was a Loli. and in the Pokemon games, you actually face off against gym leaders or Elite Four members that are Lolis or Shonas. So there you go. Or trainers all the time.
Nintendo tries to do like family friendly sort of stuff, and that kind of feeds into them creating stuff that features a lot of kid characters. They're probably thinking like, oh, that would appeal more to the younger people. And of course, I'm sure they're also aware that plenty of older people play their stuff too.
Oh yeah, like I remember that meme that says it said something like the Pokemon audience, and it showed it said like 10-year-old kids and then 35-year-old adults. Like that's because it's spanned over such a long period of time now that actually the Pokemon franchise or Nintendo franchises now have captured a massive demographic. When you think about it, it's going to be that they're capturing an audience from all the way from down from like kids all the way to like adults in their like 40s.
What that makes me think of is, you know how Pokemon stories have become a little more complex and interesting as time goes on?
Yes, which I appreciate.
I wonder if that was partly influenced by them noticing that the demographics that play their games are getting older.
Could be. You know what? I wonder if that actually has some parallel to anime, too. You remember we were talking about that just yesterday where like we felt like that there was kind of like a shift in terms of like the storytelling like of animes like seem to have gotten more. Well, this is just our opinion, of course. There's plenty of great animes that have existed prior to this time period. But it felt like when the 2010s came around that anime started to really ramp up like their complex stories and or rather the way that they structured them and the pacing and stuff like that. And I wonder if that has to do with the audience capturing like a larger audience of like different age groups now.
Now that I think of it, probably not just the audience, but also the people making the stuff too.
Oh yeah, good point. Yes, because they could have been they were most likely influenced by previous animes and mangas and honestly maybe that's the same thing with video games too. Like the people who work on Nintendo, I mean, sure, there's probably people who have been there for decades and decades, but there's probably also people who grew up with Nintendo who are working there now or working for the different companies, and they want to expand upon the stories more. But I do think you're right. I think they're probably the expansion of their stories, like in Pokemon or any of their games, really, are they're trying to add like an additional layer of more interesting or complex stuff. Although it seems to apply mostly to the Pokemon games, I noticed.
as opposed to other Nintendo games?
Well, like the Mario games.
That's true. That's honestly true. But I guess there's like kind of like less room for in the Mario universe to do that kind of stuff. That makes sense.
Yeah, no. And I do agree with that. That's probably why I loved Super Mario RPG so much, because it finally was able to kind of go a different direction. And you were able to like Mario never says anything in Super Mario RPG, but all the other characters do, including Bowser and Peach. And it was that game that made me appreciate the Nintendo characters more, because you gave Bowser an actual personality. Like prior to Super Mario RPG, Bowser's personality was just he breathed fire and he captured Princess Peach and that was it. That there was nothing else to him. But then when Super Mario RPG came out, he actually was given like a humorous personality and he had like different funny moments and he like was a likable character. And same with Peach. Like Peach kind of was actually, it kind of reinforced what you know Peach now, right? Because like we know her as like being very, very benevolent, very nice, very a very like bubbly personality. That kind of was like what it was like in Super Mario RPG, and it was fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I think they definitely can do more interesting stories with the Mario universe, now that I think of it. I think they did that in a number of games that weren't like the standard just jumping around on platform stuff.
Well, probably the Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, or Mario, Paper Mario as well.
Yeah, but I think taking into the account that they do more interesting stories in the Mario universe, but the difference is with that and the Pokemon universe is that the Pokemon stuff tends to be a little darker, just a little bit, but enough to notice, or like a little heavier, I think. That's what it seems like to me. To be fair, I haven't played any of those Mario games that do have like more interesting stories, but it just from an outsider's perspective, seems like they're still pretty light in like the tone, whereas in Pokemon it's a little bit darker, but not so much that it would like be disturbing for little kids playing it, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. No, I agree. I think you're right. I think they do tend to be a little heavier with the storytelling in Pokemon now. Of course, it didn't used to be like that, though. You know, in the old school Pokemon games like Red and Blue, I mean, there wasn't really anything like heavy in the story.
No, there was just like Team Rocket, like, is evil, I guess, whatever. Didn't really think about it very much. And you're playing, I don't remember thinking very hard about the story in Red and Blue when I played it as a kid. There wasn't much to think about.
Yeah, there wasn't. Like, even Lavender Town, like, even though that was talking about how Pokemon die and stuff like that, I when I was a kid, I never, ever, like, never processed in my brain as something to, like, think about, you know?
That's true. All right, next question.
Now, this is a very cool one. Talking about some of your first OCs you guys have created and what sort of story context they were made for. I wonder what characters did. Honestly, I think the first OC that I made were the IA characters. I don't think I've ever created any other OCs prior to that.
I suppose it depends on how we're classifying OCs, because if it includes like any character that like would have existed in a story you made, then it might be a little different. But in terms of like an OC that it made or helped make, yeah, it would pretty much be IA. And in terms of like something that actually like made into a final version of something, or like a more concrete version of something, because of course we've all had story ideas and stuff that like never went anywhere, but I definitely went somewhere.
Yeah, so I guess if you're thinking about it in the context of just any character from any idea, even if it wasn't fully realized, I mean, I did think of characters for this one story. Those characters were not very deeply, or they weren't fleshed out very much. It was just I gave them a very basic template to follow, and then I never like gave them more depth beyond that.
Yeah, so If we discount those, then for me personally, I would say it would pretty much be the IA characters.
And, you know, the IA characters, we love them and they're great. And what we wanted to do for IA2 is greatly expand upon the next set of characters that we would make. And we're very happy that we did that, because that was kind of like a big goal of ours. Because while the IA characters are the first IA characters are great, they you know, when we reflect back on it, we realize that they didn't have a huge amount of depth to them. they're pretty straightforward. You know, they didn't have like when I would think about, you know, like Simone's ambitions, or like, you know, her things that she thinks about and stuff like that, like it was a very, very like surface level stuff. Whereas in IA2 we're adding a significant amount of layers of complexity to all the characters, and it's very, very fun, and for me that really makes it feel like they're original characters, like they're OCs that both Dr. X and I have really carefully crafted.
For my part, when I joined Hydra's team for IA, the characters were already made.
Yes, that's right.
So I didn't have as much of a hand in designing those characters conceptually as I did in IE2. I had a pretty big hand in designing, let's see, Alex, Robin, Sarah, and pretty much all of Sabrina and Tracy. Idrew had a pretty very big hand in Morgan and Rose and Haley.
Yes.
And for Jenny, yeah, I think I designed Jenny's I definitely designed Jenny's appearance. But I think the in terms of the rough concept of who she is was, it was definitely like a pretty equal effort, I would say.
And I mean, each character definitely had like us giving feedback back and forth, of course. But in terms of like the core like designs, yeah, we both kind of had our own like visions and designs that we wanted to realize, and then we would go back and forth on it. But we like both really played like an active role in getting the characters looking the way they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas in the first IA, it was just me and Soap Monster making the designs, and it was primarily me coming up with characters I wanted to see, and then, you know, Soap Monster putting his own spin on them.
Yeah, that's right. And then the next question, if you can call it that, is Flamingo shouting Shota.
Yep. I told you there was someone who really, really loves Shota's character. What else can we really say about Shota? He's a great, like, true, like, Shota character in the context of the show that he's in, and he gets into all kinds of fun scenarios with Locua, and eventually, well, spoilers for those if you don't want to know, but Locua does have a sister who also apparently does a lot of fun suggestive things with Shota as well. So man, he's got it made in that story. He's really making out well.
You can tell that person behind Dragon Maid definitely likes Shota. Like Shota as like as a character type.
Yes. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about, how a lot of time, you know, in Western shows, or not necessarily Western shows, but like when Shota or Loli characters are just put in there just as a circumstantial kind of thing, and like not necessarily because the creator likes that particular character type. Whereas in Dragon Maid, like that, you can definitely tell that the creator of it is just like, yes, I must have a Shota character in my story, because I really, really love that. I really, really want to have like a Shota character.
And Flamingo's next question is, what about talking about Chali mods for games that are usually safe for work? I think that might be interesting to see what people like to add to where. I was basically thinking of eventually making some mods for Fire Emblem Awakening and Fire Emblem Fates to expand the romantic options of the romance dialogue for Shota and Loli characters, as well as the options for that. I do know, like, in the localization for Fire Emblem Fates, that there was some censorship because they were so scared that the Shota character could have feelings or for another character that might be like slightly older than them,
which is dumb. They shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have censored it.
Yeah, that definitely needs to get reversed.
Yes, it does, because you're essentially restoring it to what it originally was. So that's always something that a lot of people greatly appreciate.
For the most part, with some exceptions, a lot of the romantic relationships involving a Shota or Loli and Fire Emblem Fates are between characters that are young. They're both young themselves. So I also wanted to do some pairings that are age gap. More pairings that are age gap. There are some in the base game, but I really enjoy like expanding on that.
Yes. The other game we talked about a lot that we would love to see is putting in a mod in Persona 4 to be able to romance Nanako, because that would be a ton of fun too.
Yes, it would be. And there are mods people have made to allow players to romance a Shota character or a Loli character in Stardew Valley. I know that one.
Yes. There was that other game I was talking with you about, and I cannot remember the name, and I need to remember the name. It's like this interesting Loli character who's in kind of like this imaginary world, and they made some really super lewd and really high quality actually mods for that game, where she kind of where she like has sex with different like creatures and stuff, and it was really really well done.
Is it the Yumi Niku game?
Probably. Yes, I think so. I really thought that was really well done, so that was a lot of fun. And I think the Fallout games and the Elder Scrolls Skyrim games, that they have a crap ton of mods and with Lolly and Shota, from what I remember.
Yeah, pretty much any Bethesda game from a certain point onward.
Which is pretty cool. The Sims, of course. The Sims has mods as well. I'm trying to think of some more like obscure ones. Right. In Resident Evil 2, the remake, people made a nude mod of Sherry Birkin, which was fun. And that was really well done. And I liked that one. A Hat in Time has a nude mod. Trying to think of any others. There's actually surprisingly a decent amount. It's more like, but like for nude mods anyway, it's pretty prevalent. What's harder to find is stuff like you were talking about, where you actually add like new like gameplay or story to the game with like relationships or new like scenes or animations, that things like that. Those are a little harder to come by, but they are around though. They do exist, and usually they're pretty good quality. Like from what I've noticed, they're pretty good.
The kind of mod, Shonen Lolly mod, that I would most be interested in would honestly be something that ties into the story in some way, rather than just like being a nude mod or like a sex mod or something like that. I personally think it's more interesting when there's some kind of like new dialogue added or something like that.
Yes.
Because it kind of integrates more into the world and makes things more interesting. Probably not too surprising I'm saying all that when I'm considering that I'm a writer. And I'm sure Hydro feels pretty similar to me about that.
Yes, I do. Like, I mean, I'm thinking about how much fun it would be to have like a Nanako romance storyline in Persona 4. It'd be so fun.
Especially because of it's not just that the fact that she's a lolly, but also because it's the age gap. So you can create so many interesting stories with that kind of dynamic.
Oh man, yeah. And again, it's like that would just be a ton of fun. I would love to see that. And that's why Persona 4 Reload better come out with DLC or something that where you can still do the Ken romance despite his kind of lower pitched voice and more mature sounding voice. I still will like it if they put that in the game.
Persona 3 Reload?
Persona 3 Reload, yeah.
Yeah, in this case it would be with the male protagonist, of course, because that's how you play Persona 3 Reload, because there's no female protagonist in it.
Not yet. But that they better.
The golden version of the game or something will probably let you play as female.
Persona 3 Extra Clip. Persona 3 Extra Magazine or whatever they'd name it as.
Yeah, so if that happens, we'll have to see if the Ken romance is preserved in it. It fucking better.
Get better, otherwise people are going to mod it.
Yes, that'd definitely happen. If I'm able to, I'll help with that for sure, because I would not enjoy that being censored. However, they did keep it in the Persona 3 Portable.
You know what other game we really, really want to see? Lolly Shota's Baldur's Gate 3. Because, I mean, it seems like perfect for it, especially since you can play as a halfling. Like, that, you've already got the perfect setup right there.
Yes, and I would love, like, for people to make mods that add, like, new dialogue that acknowledges that you're playing as a kid and romancing a character.
Yes.
There's different ways of doing that, and one of them is just by doing sentence mixing, like taking words from a different sentence, putting it into another sentence to create a new sentence. And that would be a lot of fun, especially since in the base game, when you romance a character, there seems like be very little like acknowledgement of your gender. Hydro and I have noticed that. It was only like a couple of days ago, and we've been playing with for so many hours.
Yeah, like 100 plus hours.
That Karlach finally acknowledged Hydro's gender during the romance. And it was surprising that it happened because it had never happened before. There is a Shodan Lolly mod for Baldur's Gate 3 right now. I don't think it's finished because there's a lot of work going into it, but
you can
go into go on to ATF to check out the progress for that. I haven't checked in a while, so I'm not really sure where they're at. But it would be really great if in that mod they added new dialogue, because it would just be so much more immersive and fun and interesting if there was new dialogue that acknowledged that you were playing as a kid, rather than like you just playing as a kid and like no one notices it or mentions it. Yeah, so those are the kinds of mods that I really want to see, is stuff that integrates with the story. I think that would be great, and I have a feeling that Flamingo would like that, those kind of mods too. You know, what I'm wondering about is, I know there's a Stardew Valley mod that lets you romance the Shota. I wonder how much of that is like geared towards gay guys instead of female players.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
That's something that would be interesting to find out. Maybe mod makers can think about if they're making something like that allows for like a romance with a Shota character, that it might be nice to have some stuff that for our female players as well.
And I mean, talk about the ideal game to try that out on, considering how many female players play Stardew Valley. They make up a huge part of the player base.
That is true. That's definitely true.
So from 94kun, he says, is it possible if you could talk about the Loud House and its fandom? I'm also hoping if you could talk about the Loud House porn games as well. I don't know much about the Loud House fandom. I know of the Loud House, of course, and I know it was pretty popular when it came out. I think there's at least two or three different Loud House porn games. I personally have not played them, and I'll give you my... And Dr. X is going to most likely chime in on this too with a similar opinion. But the reason why I have not played those games is because... Now, I totally get it if you want to be authentic to the show's style. And from what I've seen, I gotta commend the creators of these Loud House porn games, because they did create the characters authentically to exactly how they look in the show. So, you know, if I was like a big time Loud House fan and I was looking for like a good, not safe for work game, I would be super pumped about that. I would be excited to see like the characters are there and it's an NSFW game and I can play it and it'd be awesome. But for me as like a someone who's not part of the fandom and more wants an NSFW game that is like, you know, how could I say it? Like, I would prefer to see the characters a bit more stylized, like that they're not going to look like how they look exactly in the show, but instead you get the spirit of their design and then you add, you know, you add a more, how could I say it? Like, yeah, what would it be? That you'd be doing to them, Dr. X, if you're like basically making them more like, I don't know how I could explain it.
If you look at the designs of the stuff in Western cartoons that are like made for kids, basically, they kind of go out of their way to have things designed in like in a less sexual way.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Very sanitized. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very sanitized. And of course, that doesn't stop some people from basically doing the porn in that style. But I would say that I'm not a big fan of that kind of sanitized look, because it kind of reminds me of like, first of all, it's not, I don't find it as sexy, which shouldn't be a surprise because they deliberately tried to make it less sexy.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm not really a big fan of that look. In terms of making it look sexier for certain people such as myself, it would be a matter of like undoing the kind of sanitization and desexualization, which would in large part be making things rounder instead of angular. That would be a big thing. It's less exaggeration for some of the proportions.
Yep.
Probably like less noodle arm stuff. And in some cases, you would actually remove some of the roundness, because it's kind of like a mixed bag. Some things are made more angular and some things are made more round. Yeah, basically just reverse the desexualization stuff. But you know, if someone is into like the Loud House style as it is in a sexual context, that's fine. Personally, I'm not. So I would say that in terms of like just visuals, I would probably prefer something that, like if it's a Bloodhouse prone game, that deviates from the style on the show enough so that it would be sexually entertaining to me. But other than that, like, I'm not really sure I would play a Loud House porn game because I'm not really familiar with the cartoon very much. So, in other words, I'm not really the target audience there.
Yeah, I'm not either. And I only know it like very superficially, like very little of it. I know about, but I'm with Dr. X that I would need like a bit more sexually appealing design for me, for the characters in the game, for me to want to play it. And I have seen like fan art of people kind of doing exactly like what Dr. X and I would like to see. Like, for example, they've made like the mom character like very like much curvier and like much like a more like anime style, and it looked very nice. Like big thumbs up from me with it. And then if it was that kind of style, that then I would probably be more attracted to the game, but I still wouldn't know about the characters very much. And that's where, you know, it would be cool if whoever created the Loud House game kind of could give kind of a rundown of the characters just to give you a sense as to what they're like based on the show. And then like someone who's a non-fan could still enjoy the game even if they're coming from it from a non-fandom perspective. That's some food for thought if you're a writer and you're trying to like attract people who may not be into a fandom and how you can pull them in.
Yep. So now we'll go through some plugs from a Smoy. Speaking of shamelessly plugging, I'll do just that. And he links to his AO3 account. And it seems like he mostly does male X-male works, including Shota.
We also have a plug from Flamingo, who I think had put the same message after Smoy had done his message. And Flamingo also is plugging their archive of their own, and they do very comfy straight Shota romance work. So if you're into very comfy, wholesome straight Shota stuff, you'll definitely want to check that out.
From Arnie, they say, well, if we're plugging our own stuff, I'll plug my brag page again. And I took a look at it, and they've got NSFW, Loli, Shota, and Incest, Koikatsu, 3D anime works.
And we have another plug from Malies. Here is mine. I may post different content ranging from Sims 4, Daz, and Koikatsu. So there's kind of your summary as to what they create on their Barag.
From 94Kun, they plug their Barag account, and you can find some fan art, including some of IA and IU2.
Nice. So we have also a message from Roland993. Where he says, currently playing Trails into Reverie and just waiting for my favorite character, I think it's Fee, to make an appearance. She is so cute and cat-like, and there's a artwork picture of her. Yes, she is very cute and has some pretty cool weapons, too.
And it looks like a ninja character.
Yeah. It's pretty neato. I like it.
From Vile Terror, linking their story on Pixiv, and they say, please feel free to give some feedback on my writing. And they all go on to say I do want to also say that I welcome criticism. I do feel it's important for me to receive critical responses to my work in my effort to improve. So, and Vile Terror's story seems to be about, I'll just read the tags here, Loli, daughter, father, and Cecilia size difference in hardcore. So if that sounds good to you, check that out. And then we've got a message from Elise, and they say, hi, not sure how much it qualifies, but I've been making a game that has a Shota protagonist with a BBW MILF elf and many other monster girls, so it's like One Shota. Basically, it's a femdom, harem, pregnancy visual novel game called Ovulating Maiden. In a post-apocalyptic world, the only living male left is a young boy named Minori, that lewd monster girls want to be impregnated by to repopulate their monster girl races. Elves happen to find him first. He has two elf baby offspring in the game so far. And then Elise has a second part to the message. Here's a full description. About two of every monster girl breed was saved from an unprecedented world war that obliterated the humans, monster girls, and the goddesses. Placed into unbreakable egg-like sleeping pods, the monster girls slumber. Sometime later, due to an unknown stimuli, eight previously unbreakable egg-like pods crack open, one of which containing you. While receiving a blowjob from an elf, you awaken to find that you're the only human male alive. Additionally, you find out that due to a final blessing of the fertility goddess, monster girls can reach full-term pregnancy in about a day, and then baby's age can be accelerated to maturity just as fast. Thus, possessing you means a monster girl can save her race by breeding with you and having her offspring breed with you. Of the seven living monster girls, you befriend the kind elves, but will that really work out? Can all the monster girls befriend one another, or will they seek war to possess you? Can you trust any of the monster girls to protect you? And what about all the monster girls sleeping endlessly within their pods? Thanks a lot. You can find the game and screenshots on my blog here. 0.20b is the current version. And then they list their website, which is pizzacatmx.com. And they go on to say, and I post smaller updates on my blog page here. I might eventually try to stream me playing it on somewhere like Pomf.tv. So if that sounds interesting to you, be sure to check that out on their brag or their website.
This is a message from Hubert Pewter, and he says, over the past 2 years, I have been writing a story called Lil. It's a wholesome Lolly Yuri story, and it has been my passion since I started it. Originally, it was indented to only have two parts, and it was barely etchy. But then I continued writing, and it's slowly becoming increasingly lewd while maintaining its wholesomeness at its core. A crazy idea I had: when the book is finished, I'm going to print one hard copy and sell it to the highest bidder. And we have his story linked and his brag linked. So if you're interested in checking that stuff out.
Yeah, that's awesome that Hubert Pewter is been writing this story. I mean, a passion project always feels good to work on. I mean, that's what IA was for me. It was a true passion project. I had no idea where it was going to go. I didn't know it was going to, you know, get as many fans as it did. I just wanted to just create it. And, you know, Hubert, I really hope you get a lot of fans like for your project. And even if you don't, getting that story finished will feel really satisfying. Very like it gives you a lot of good sense of accomplishment when that happens. And now that we're showcasing you on Chollycast, maybe you'll get a few more comments or people discussing about your story.
Yeah, if you're into Lolly Yuri, that's wholesome. Be sure to check that out. Check his stuff out. So thank you for your message, Hubert.
And we have another message here from, I think it's Robashiri. Hopefully I pronounced it right. Robashiri's message says, seeing your posts, well, I would like to leave some things to share with the rest. Maybe I am a nobody, but I would still like to share. I would like to tell the Barag community in general that I am happy to be in it. I really feel grateful because I was able to meet people who became my friends over time. I thank you from my heart. Also, I want to share this old work in progress I did some time ago. Maybe it's not that good, but well, I'd like to share it anyway. And then they did a bit of laughing at the end. Ha ha ha. So thank you for sharing the work in progress. We will be posting that because it's a not safe for work work in progress. We'll be kind of sharing that on our brag when we post up this episode.
But we can describe it. It's a very cute small lolly, and she's grabbing one penis off to the side. And there's another penis kind of like next to her face, and she is like sitting on the lap of a ugly bastard gentleman.
And hey, we're not knocking on ugly bastard. That is its own genre, and there are people who like that kind of stuff, that pairing of lollies and ugly bastards. So
oh, absolutely. I mean, so it's so prevalent. People have got to like it, and we've even spoken to people who like the ugly bastard stuff.
Yes, we've had guests on.
Yeah, they are. It's great. We'll be posting that as probably like as a reply to the brag post. So if you into Lully and Ugly Bastards, check that out.
Yeah, check out Robashiri's brag. And to the other part of the message, you know, brag has really become just an awesome place for Lolly and Shota fans and creators. And I totally agree with the message. From what Dr. X and I have seen, the Bragg community is a lot more accepting and a lot more open to things. And I have a feeling that part of that is probably because of what they've had to deal with in the past in other spaces online and where they might have been banned from. And also, you know, what they're into and what they create, of course. So, you know, you kind of have to be, you have to be a bit more accepting of what people are into when you're a Lolly Shota creator. I think that's kind of a given.
Yeah, I met some amazing people in this community and made some amazing friends as well. So it's really important that we keep on being friendly to each other and accepting towards each other, and the community becomes stronger from that. So I really have to thank everyone that in the community who has been strengthening it by forming connections with each other and being friendly and nice with each other. That's really awesome. And I have definitely met some, like, I would say that this community has been like the pretty much the nicest community I've ever interacted with. So it's really special to me.
Yes, and that goes for the IA community, the Bragg community. And you know, it goes back to like what you were saying, that the more that you are accepting of new people and reinforcing kind of the connections you have with the friends you make on Bragg and stuff, the stronger the community becomes. And then over time, what that kind of will do is it'll reach a point where the Lolly Shota community will be strong enough that people will start accepting it more and more who are outside that community.
Yeah.
That's what Dr. X and I firmly believe is going to happen. It's not like a matter of if it will happen, but when.
Yeah. So the next message is from Roftastic, and they say, great idea. I commented on one of the IE2 updates about Complets VNs and how I love their work. You can find downloads for, and I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly probably, Yagai Gakushu 1 and 2, its spin-off Mogugu Natsu Yasumi, as well as both their English patches on All the Fallen. You could also use this as an opportunity to gush about Flat Cheese since you both played them. For Flat Cheese, I think the art style is like very cute. It's like you can tell it was deliberately made very cute.
Yes.
I enjoyed playing it. I would say that the only thing for me is that it's very like, it's a little slow in progression for like the sex stuff. And that might be because the creator is a little uncomfortable with doing certain sex acts in their game, and that's perfectly fine. I would definitely like to see more progression with sex acts in future Flat Cheese installments. But I definitely did enjoy playing it when I did.
I did too. I thought it was fun. Like what I did like was the gradual progression of like characters becoming more lewd, like at the school. Like I remember there was like one Lolly character who ends up like wearing like barely any clothing or something like that when she comes into school. Like I liked that stuff. That stuff was fun.
And there are mysterious uncensored versions of Flat Cheese 1 and 2 that you can find on All the Fallen. and they're extremely mysterious. Don't think about it too hard.
Yes, very mysterious.
I think they do sell the English version of 1 and 2 on Deal site.
I believe so, yes.
And Flat Cheese 3 was released a little while ago, maybe like a few months ago, maybe. Pretty much the only reason why I haven't tried Flat Cheese 3 yet is because I don't want to deal with those aggressive mosaics. I'm very averse to them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. We both are.
I think it's only a matter of time before Japan gets rid of that. It's just hard for me to imagine, like, for the rest of human history, they don't get rid of this, like, this archaic backwards censorship, like modesty bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I think that was first implemented after World War II, and it was like just a goofy like, yeah, like I,
especially with like, you know, like with the newer generations and younger people becoming voters and older people passing away, it's not going to last forever. There's no fucking way.
Yeah,
it doesn't work like that. it's not going to be for the rest of history, and then a meteor like destroys Earth, or like Earth gets swallowed by the fucking sun, and like the second before the Earth is destroyed by the sun, things are still fucking censored in Japan. Can you mention that? God damn. No, I don't think it would be like that. But you know, of course, I would. Even though I think it's an eventuality, I would like it sooner than later. And I think I'm sure a lot of other people feel the same thing, feel the same way, including the creators who have to censor their precious works. I feel bad for them that they have to do that. So hopefully very soon they won't have to do that.
Yes, I really hope. I think it will happen. And who knows, it may happen sooner than you think.
Yeah, I think some people are a little biased towards thinking pessimistically about this stuff. But, you know, a lot of times reality is not as pessimistic as you think it is.
Yes, that is true.
And the next part of Rofftastic's message is, I was waiting for an episode like this, but I want to delve even deeper into this psychology than just what defines both. He is referring to the Shota and Loli episode we did where we classified the Shota and Loli stuff. And the next part of the message is, I don't know how it is for Loli guys, but a lot of the Shota attraction to me comes from fantasizing about sex when I was a kid. Parentheses Shota. It's just one giant taboo self-insert fantasy for me that's led me down the rabbit hole to donating to the TCH Subscribestar, lol. I'm not really sure what the TCH... Yes, I know what it fucking is. It's Steam Cyberhex.
See, we've never seen our name abbreviated.
Yes, that's cool. Okay, that is the first time I've seen it abbreviated. But thank you very much for supporting us. I really appreciate that.
Yes, and Rofftastic, you've supported us for a very, very long time now, and so we really, really appreciate that. Along with everybody else who's supported us for. Since the beginning, like, because there are still people who have been supporting us for the past 3 years now since our Subscribestar started. So it's pretty amazing.
We appreciate you guys so much. Like, it means so much to us that you're supporting us.
And it's pretty much your support.
It allows us to continue working on our games and continue doing this podcast and, you know, continue giving back to the community, because this podcast is definitely part of us doing that.
Yeah, that's right.
So... for me too, that a lot of the attraction to Straight Shota does come from self-inserting myself into the fantasy. That's definitely true.
Yes.
And for Loli guys, probably the same thing. But except they're like self-inserting to the guy fucking the Loli, basically. So there's definitely a lot of self-insert stuff going on with these different genres. Not always. Some people don't self-insert and they just kind of like... they might imagine themselves as like being a third party just watching. Personally, for me, I would say that for Straight Shota, definitely self-insert fantasy. What about you, Hydro?
I would say yes, it is a self-insert fantasy, but it sometimes with some characters, like I picture them as like the character themselves paired up with another character. Not always, but I would imagine psychologically, though, it's probably me. Is self-inserting though most of the time. And then we also don't want to forget too that there are females out there who like to self-insert as the Loli
or the woman having sex with a Shota.
Yes, yeah, yep, that too. So like it goes both ways, and there is a lot of that. And I think the appeal of Straight Shota definitely stems from because when you think about it, when you were a kid, you definitely would have like these, you know, fantasies. And so, you know, with Straight Shota, that kind of fulfills that.
Absolutely. So that's why it's a lot of fun, is that you can kind of, yeah, you can fulfill those fantasies that you had. And I think that's a big, big appeal to Shota and Loli stuff in general, is the fulfillment of those fantasies. Sometimes it's not that. Sometimes it's just like people incidentally like a Shota or a Loli character, But for a lot of us, we do like the genre in general rather than it being in some kind of something incidental. But, you know, either approach is fine.
Yes.
I remember in the episode we did with Shimo that she mentioned that some creators, like in Japan, who make like straight loli stuff, they actually identify with or self-insert into the loli character.
Yep.
Everyone like has their own approach to this sort of thing. So that's interesting to me that, you know, it can be pretty diverse in how people approach this stuff. But I would say in general, it's probably that people, guys into straight loli will just self-insert to the male character and stuff like that. All right, next message.
So the next message is from Mary Fan, and Mary Fan says, "Some words of encouragement. Do not be afraid to pursue your interests if you ever thought of taking up this type of thing as an artist. You're not hurting anyone, and while the community can bite a bit, you'll receive a lot more support here and from us as opposed to a place like Twitter. You're cool, you're loved, and we should all embrace Cunny together." Yes, we should. So that's some excellent words of encouragement from Mary Fan, and we totally agree with that. Brag is a far more accepting place than Twitter. It's pretty awesome that Brag exists, and it's grown a ton. And I mean, I do see like almost every other day there's some artist that got banned off Twitter, and they're just kind of like, you know, fuck Twitter, I'm sticking with Brag. Like, and yeah, you should, because Brag is going to be an awesome place for you, awesome platform.
I definitely agree with the Mary Fan's message. This art doesn't hurt anyone. You don't need to worry about that. It's just art. You don't have to think about the deep moral implications of the art any more than you do have to think about like when you play Mortal Kombat or if you like make a similar game.
Yep.
You're definitely cool and loved, and should definitely embrace Cunny or show the penis. I think people had said like maybe the equivalent to Cunny is Peeny for Shota or Pee-Pee.
I think I'll go with Pee-Pee because if Peeny makes me think of the pasta, that makes me think of that. But yeah, I mean, it's still fun though. I like it. Either Peeny or Pee-Pee is good.
I like Pee-Pee better.
Yeah. And then the second part of the message goes into character-specific stuff. All that said, Umbrella from Skullgirls, which we have a picture of her on the right, is a triple S-tier loli. I love her so much. Like, holy fuck. Mary is a hot piece of cunny. Sure, but Umbrella hits all the right notes and then some. I don't care about the game's controversies. There's nothing I wouldn't do to marry and father many, many of my offspring with her. She is perfect. She is very cute. I do like very creative designs of loli characters, because that's always fun to watch. I mean, the creative character designs with anything is great, but when it's like a loli or Shota, they can really do a lot of fun stuff. I've actually never played Skullgirls, but I know that there was a big fan base for it, and like there was a lot of great stuff, a lot of great characters designed in that game.
With fighting games, is like, I really want to get into them more because there's so many great characters in fighting games.
I totally agree.
The only problem is like a lot of them have like wildly different mechanics, and I'm like, do I really want to learn all these different kind of mechanics? And then I could just play on easy, but then like I'm hurting my pride.
No, I totally get the feeling. Yep.
I just need to like figure out, do I just want to play on easy, or do I want to spend the time learning a fighting game? So I'll have to figure that out. I do know I can handle Tekken because I grew up with Tekken. So I wouldn't have a problem playing Tekken 8 when it comes out this month.
I wonder if there's going to be like a lot of good mods for Tekken. But of course, the only mods they usually make are just nude mods, and that's it.
Yeah, I think I'm more excited about like animations that people make in Blender.
Oh yeah, that's right. There's going to be a lot of them. That's going to be great. That's one of the great benefits of those games that come out that are made in Unreal Engine or any kind of, really any any 3D game now, people know how to rip the models from, or just the heads of the characters. So, yeah, like, I mean, with fighting games, I'm totally with you on that. Like, I just, it takes so much time to get good at them. And, you know, you don't want to put it on easy because then that's like, it makes you feel pathetic. I would love it if like a fighting game would come out that would be like, I don't know how I can explain it, but it'd be like cool if they made a fighting game that was like more RPG than like fighting, I guess, is how I could explain it. It's kind of like when you'd fight somebody, it would be more like a turn-based kind of thing, which I know would turn it. It wouldn't be like a traditional fighting game in that sense, but I would be much more into playing a game like that with having all these variety of characters, but not necessarily have to do all the hardcore grinding and learning of learning all the different characters' moves and their combos. And then after you master just one character from playing dozens and dozens of hours, and you're just like, all right, I got to move on to the next character now.
Yeah, that would be interesting if they ended up having a game like that that blended some RPG mechanics into it. Next message. This is Mia's message. This is Mia of Team Pervy. I really just want to say that I'd like this community to never change. Sure, it's a community, and with all community come a number of bad people, but there are honestly so few in that community. I've been on the internet for a long time, and I swear to God, the Lolly and Shoto community are the nicest people I've met online. And part of what inspires me to work hard and throw my stuff out there. That's how I met my best friend in the world and work partner, and now my life has never been better. So no matter what the rest of the world thinks of us, I'd like this community to never change. Stay kind, welcoming, and accepting. Very, very nice message from Mia. I totally 100% agree.
I totally agree with what Mia is saying. I mean, I can't even really think of any like bad people in the community. I mean, I just see, at least if they do exist, that that they don't tend to get much. How could I say it? Like they don't get much of a platform. Meaning that the usually the Lolly and Shota community are just gonna either ignore them, or you know they're just kind of that's honestly the best method, is to just like ignore the bad people and just stick with, you know, the positivity and all the good people in the community, because there are a lot of them. Like Dr. X and I have met a ton.
Yeah, I think she's probably just like means like, you know, like all communities, like there are sometimes like rude people and everything.
Yeah.
I've met so many nice people in this community, and like when I think about it, it's not super surprising, because like what Hydra said earlier is that a lot of us have had to deal with certain things because of our interest in this stuff. So from that, a lot of us have developed a certain kind of empathy that we were like more friendly and more accepting and more tolerant of each other, even though we might have different interests or might like Shoto and Lolly in a different way. Yeah, I just met so many amazing people in this community, and I really love this community.
I do too. It's the best community I've been a part of by far.
I've never been in a better community than this.
No, I haven't either. Like, I want to stick with it. I want to stick with it for the rest of my life, basically.
Me too, and we will.
Yes.
Yeah, I did also meet my best friend in this community, and I think a lot of other people have met very, very close friends and very dear friends in this community. Something to think about if you don't currently have a friend in this community, just think about putting yourself out there and talking to people and making a friend in this community, so that you have someone who understands your interest in this kind of art and this kind of community. So just something to think about, because if you try, it's very possible you might make a very good friend here.
Yeah, that's right. Or possibly something more. I mean, and that's happened too.
Yeah, we're single.
Yep, we're available. What we're just trying to say is, that's the thing, is you do have to put yourself out there. But the great thing is that when you put yourself out there in a community that understands the same or is into the same things that you are, much higher chance that you're going to connect with somebody and then form whatever kind of relationship, might be a friendship, a really deep friendship, you know, more than that. it's going to be more likely to happen. And the Lolly and Shota community has really shown us that, man, there's like, we've heard of so many different people who've made friends, some people who've had gotten girlfriends, boyfriends, everything in between. And it's pretty awesome to see.
Now we have a message from Sanake Kion.
Yes, this is a rather lengthy message, but it has a lot of great stuff in here. So the message starts off, "For me, I originally found myself as having a guilty pleasure for taboo content. Being a baby fur, cub content was the biggest example, seeing a lot and enjoying it. But because I have a lot of friends who sadly don't get it, I convinced myself that I was wrong for liking it. Last year, I thankfully managed to overcome that hurdle thanks to the help of someone else. Stoneth, a friend I was getting close to then and now my girlfriend, ended up talking to me about a misunderstanding that had occurred and helped me come to fully understand that fantasies are not to be shamed. And with that, I started to fully open up and the guilt vanished from the pleasure. I still consider that moment with her extremely important, and I am still very grateful for her for helping me out with that. Another positive influence for me was Jenny, a lone wolf, who I met on a Discord server. After a particular discussion on Sonic characters' ages on said server, Jenny DM'd me, since I was showing an understanding disposition to the fictional nature of said characters. She showed me some of her work of her Lolly Sona and her Sonic nude mods, which really grabbed me. It meant a lot to have another friend who was into the taboo content. When she trusted me enough to invite her to her server, I was all in, and having access to a full community consisting of people who enjoy taboo content was especially enlightening. I also first learned of this podcast from her server, and your work has been a nice way to come to learn more about the people in the Lolly and Shota communities." We really appreciate that. We're going to read the next part of it. "I think the big message to take away from my experiences is that sometimes you just need to know the right person to help you overcome your apprehensions. I'm sure there's probably at least one person watching or listening who is in the position I once was, secretly enjoying Lolly, Shota, Cub, or even an unusual kink, but feeling like they're wrong for it. To anyone who is in this place, I would advise seeking out a friend who isn't guilty about their enjoyment of something similar or even the same thing as you, and talking with them about it. A simple chat can really open up your perspectives and give you a better outlook on your interests. I would also be happy to give my ideas for possible topics for future episodes. One of my ideas is possibly discussing kinks and combining them with Shali, since a lot of kink communities can face similar ostracization that Shota and Lolly does. Another thought I have is the possibility of discussing gender non-conforming or even trans Lollies and Shotas. I'm not sure how common that actually is, but it's an idea I quite like, and I would love to see it talked about, even if it's just part of an episode due to not having enough material for a full episode. Speaking of that, I've been writing a story based on a role play with a friend, which includes a scene where my gender non-conforming male persona gets scanned by a machine and marked as a Lolly by it." So we probably should discuss some of this because there's quite a lot to unpack here, and then it kind of goes into like some character gushing after that. So yeah. I figured since this is different parts and stuff. So first of all, that's a really awesome story that you've told us about how you met your girlfriend, and how you were talking to, how you became, you started accepting the taboo content that you enjoyed, the Lolly Shota, the baby fur stuff. I mean that's great to have that kind of moment, because it really changes your life when that occurs. And what's great is that you are totally right that meeting somebody else to help you learn to accept it or learn to realize that it's not wrong to enjoy the content that you like, that helps tremendously. Like when you have a friend who's able to, you know, extend their hand out to you and kind of give you a way to communicate to them about how you feel about things when you haven't been able to before is big. Like that's one of the biggest things somebody can have happen.
Exactly. And I think it's funny how Sanake ended up talking about the things we were just talking about previous to reading the message.
Yes.
Like getting a girlfriend and also them talking about like their advice on how to like not feel bad about interest in this kind of art is to like make a friend who doesn't feel guilty about it and, you know, getting a new perspective that way. So that's very cool that there's echoing in this message, and I'm glad you had that positive experience. And that's, and I definitely think that we all can have positive experiences like that in this community. It's not beyond anyone.
Yeah, it's not. And how this all started was they talked to someone and they got to know them better. And that's all it took. That's all it took. What was having that initial reach out and that conversation. And that's all it takes.
Yeah. Try to put yourself out there a little bit. You're not alone in this community whatsoever. There's lots of other people who like you, and there's people who like the same stuff as you do, and don't feel bad about it. Cause I don't feel bad about it, about this stuff at all. You know, I know I'm not hurting anyone.
Yep. That's right.
Just having a good old time with my shodas and lollies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So if you're currently in a kind of like mental headspace where you do feel guilty about it in some way, just know that that's not how you have to feel permanently. You can grow and move on from that. And a lot of us have. So don't lose hope if you're worried about that, because you can definitely get into a better space.
Definitely.
In regards to the possible topics for future episodes, yeah, would be pretty interesting to talk about the combinations of different kinks and shoda and lolly, or like the stuff like the gender non-conforming or trans lollies and shodas. If anyone is interested in that, we touch upon it a little bit in the Hickey episode of Shellycast, so you can check that out. And Hickey is also a trans man, and yeah, we might have an episode talking about that. I do notice on Barag that sometimes you'll see like trans lollies or shodas. I think most of all I see trans shoda characters, so that's cool that you do see that kind of diversity in on Barag, and if you know people's different takes on how they like their shoda, or if they want to explore a different kind of a idea or a character type. So I think that stuff is really cool. I think it's cool that like people can kind of explore themselves or express themselves, whether like it's through their gender or something else through lolly and shoda. One thing I'll definitely say is that we like the porn and stuff of lolly and shodas a lot, obviously. But there's other aspects to the whole thing, to the genre and also the community. So that's one of the greatest things that I like about doing this podcast, is I can kind of sort of discuss these things in a more meta or like cultural sense instead of just the porn sense. Like, bro, I want to fuck that lolly. You know, even though I like to joke about that a little bit, and I do like the porn, as I said, but you know, it's fun to talk about this stuff beyond just that aspect as well. So, and I would definitely like to see more people talking about like the kind of like cultural aspect of shoda lolly, because it's very interesting, and there's so many elements to it.
Yeah, there is.
Including the gender stuff as well. One thing I find kind of interesting, and might talk about this in a future episode in more depth, is that I've seen that some like straight guys like do like shoda, like attracted to the shoda. Some lesbians are attracted to shodas. Some gay guys are attracted to lollies. Some straight women are attracted to lollies. So it's kind of interesting gender dynamics there.
Yeah, there is.
Lollies and shodas can kind of like, I don't know, transcend gender in a way.
Well, it shows they got a universal appeal.
For a lot of people, yeah, it does. I think part of it is like lollies and shodas are not like super duper different in terms of how their body structure is.
Yes, yeah, that's true, yep.
In that sense, I could definitely see how like a gay guy, for example, might be interested in like a boyish lolly or something.
Yes.
Because other than like the genital equipment, it's not going to be that different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
Still got that flat chest and everything. And if they're a tomboy, even like boyish appeal in that sense. So that was always kind of an interesting thing for me, is the kind of a gender topic for lollies and shodas. Not just regarding the gender non-conforming or trans stuff, but even just how people approach lollies and shodas in the context of their of their own gender identity or their own sexuality or sexual orientation. So that stuff's pretty cool. Pretty interesting to think about.
It is interesting to think about, and it makes for, like, you could practically have, like, a whole episode talking about it because it's so interesting.
I think you could, and you know, I kind of think about this stuff, like, you could have a fucking classes in university talking about this stuff.
Man, I wish.
It's just that people are kind of scared about the topics, or like the peripheral topics, so they're not willing to go into it. So it's kind of nice to go a little bit beyond the surface on this podcast regarding the Shodan Lolly stuff. That is a great thing about the podcast.
That's the reason why the podcast exists. That's the reason why we wanted to create it, because we have stuff like this, and you know, this community episode just brings this topic up to the forefront. So it's cool. So all right, I'm going to continue on with the message with some character gushing. I would also like to add some character gushing as well. The obvious and easy choice for me is Tails, one of the first characters in general I really got attached to at a young age, and he still is an absolute favorite of mine, still as adorable as ever, and played into my pansexual awakening when I was a teenager, as did Amy Rose, who also occupies a special place in my heart. I remember as a young teen, I actually fantasized about being in a poly relationship with Tails and Amy. Since I am in a poly relationship now, with my partners being a girl and a guy, that feels almost prophetic. I had a nice time with those fantasies. Not exactly Shota or Lolly related, but an old lost fanfic involving Amy and Cream also happened to be where I learned the terms baby fur and diaper fur, which are the terms I primarily use for myself online. I do think diapered lollies and Shotas are among the cutest things ever. While I'm on that point, some of my favorite taboo art involves diapers since they are my main kink. Tails is definitely a great, like, furry Shota. Like, he is, I think he's one of the most, he's got to be one of the most popular furry Shotas. He's got to be.
It kind of feels like Tails is like a gateway drug. You know what I mean? Where, like, Tails will get people interested in Shota or Cub. People could easily get into Tails and then move on to, I shouldn't say move on, and then, like, kind of expand their interest into, like, human Shotas as well.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Because Tails is an anthro, it might be a little easier to, like, get into it compared to like a human Shota for some people. Kind of like a easier way of, like, entering into the kind of, like, the topic or the genre and stuff. Because the Sonic universe has, like, characters like Tails and Cream, you definitely got people who get into Cub or Shota Lolly through those characters.
Definitely. And I wonder if it's, like, when you think about Tails' design and Cream's design, it's like that they're such, like, a very accessible design. You know what I mean? Like, in other words, they're, like, a great starting point for somebody who may not, like maybe somebody is just discovering that they're into, like, they're into Cub or they're into Lolly or Shota, and, like, Tails and Cream become, like, that gateway for them. And, yeah. And it's because they got that perfect, like, mixture of, you compare Tails up with Rouge, with Amy, Cream can also match up with Tails, Cream can match up with Sonic, can match up, like, you got, they're like really, really malleable for that kind of stuff.
Because, like, they're anthros, I feel like it's a little more separated from reality, so that can make it easier for some people.
That's true too, yes. And it's totally true that's another thing about, you know, these characters is that they are timeless, meaning that, you know, they're always going to remain cute. They're always going to remain that same way. So you're always going to be attracted to them. And that's why they're always going to hold a special place. Kind of like people who feel about Misty, right? I feel like Misty is kind of like in that same category as Tails, where, like, Misty is like that Lolly kind of character, or Lolly adjacent character that people really got into, that probably was a gateway for them.
Misty is like a kind of character where, like, they can be portrayed either way. So, like,
yes,
normies will
right.
get into Misty, and you'll see like people, like, cosplay, doing, like, erotic cosplay of Misty and stuff like that.
Yep. All right, so let's see. The next part is Tulin is a recent addition to the Sholi roster since Tears of the Kingdom is still quite new, but absolutely worth mentioning. While he was in Breath of the Wild beforehand, his glow up in Tears of the Kingdom was what really shot him into the furry stardom. I've had a like for Burbs for quite a while, and seeing Tulin in Tears of the Kingdom, or TOTK, for the first time really made me proud to be a Burb enjoyer. He's decked out with some nice colorful attire, he's very strong and skilled and has an adorable voice. Helps that he's probably the most helpful ally character, thanks to the many practical applications of his skill and his archery style of combat, making it quite likely he can get some surprise hits on foes. Very much one of the most memorable characters in the Zelda series for quite a while, and for good reason. I have not played Tears of the Kingdom nor Breath of the Wild, so I'm not familiar, and I really want to play it. It's just I like playing games on PC so much. So,
you know what the funny thing is? I was on Google so I could give you the link to his wiki page. And when I typed in Tulin, Tears of the Kingdom, the first result like for the autocomplete thing was age. So I was just wondering, like were people wondering like, oh my God, is it okay to loot him? Is he 18 years old? You know what I
mean? I like him though. I think there was another Burb character in the game too that I liked. There's a lot of really great. Again, the Zelda game, like Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, added a lot of great characters to the game. So that's awesome that Tulin is like another, because there's not a whole lot of Burb Shotas and Lollies, not that I can think of, that are Anthro, that are well, like, that are part of, like, a big franchise or something that I can think of. So it's cool to see one that's like, really actually, like, a useful, that it probably, it's like they said, it's helpful that he's actually a good character that's useful. Like, he's a good, useful ally that certainly probably helps add to the memorability. Because if he wasn't very helpful, that probably wouldn't have helped.
I just gotta love people who are looking up his age as if it fucking matters. He's like a cartoon chicken.
It does matter. I gotta know if the Splatoon characters are of age, which they are, which is kind of funny.
The Inklings are adults?
Yeah, they're 18. Yes, it's really, really funny. Because I remember people were, like, talking about that, too. As far as I know, they are 18 when you go on the wiki. It's pretty funny.
18 years old, exactly. It was their birthday today.
Yep. And I feel like that was intentionally done. It really does feel like that. So then, talk about a Fire Emblem character. Lastly, while Selkie from Fire Emblem Fates is probably more Lolly adjacent, I can't help but bring her up. She's possibly my favorite fictional character ever, and it's had a massive impression on me, or it's made a massive impression on me. I even have a body pillow of her in Valoria. Nice. My Fursona's main form is Hoshidan Kitsune, specifically because of her. I love her silly and childish personality, and I find it so endearing and adorable, and quite easy to imagine being into my main kink as well. She's fairly ideal for me as a result, since I find her very relatable, since I can't deny that part of my mind never left childhood. I also love the two-toned hair in her design, and that influenced my Sona's design as well. I'm always looking out for new art and such of her, since she's so special to me. I've even had a few pics of her made as well through commissions or raffles, which has been nice. And for those of those curious on her two voices, I prefer her original voice by Elizabeth Daly. The gravelly voice just seems to hit better for me than the more generic high-pitched voice she has in Heroes. No disrespect to Alexa Khan, of course. Her take is still cute, but it just isn't my preference. Thanks for reading through this, you two, and if this gets in the episode, which it has, thanks to everyone who listened, and once again, if you have doubts about being into this, talk to friends who understand it and be open to letting them help you. Well, that was a fantastic message, Sanake, and that's awesome. I like it's another Fire Emblem. Now, do you know about that Fire Emblem character, Dr. X, Selkie?
Yes, I do. I've played Fire Emblem Fates at least 3 times, and I do like it, and I would like to replay it, especially if I end up modding it for more Shooter and Lolly, which I hopefully will end up doing. I was actually thinking of like doing that, making mods for Fire Emblem Awakening and Fates, and then having Hydra play it.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
Because Hydra, I love talking about like games you played or anime you watched, and like talking about characters you liked or the story, the stuff I really enjoy doing with the Hydro. So it'd be fun for him to play through the game. And I think you do like strategy RPGs to begin with, don't you?
Oh yeah, I do. Yes, I never freaking get the time to play them. Mm-hmm. So this will be a good excuse to play it.
Research for the podcast, bro.
Yep, so it's just really important research.
Selkie's very cute. Yeah, I would say she's Lolly adjacent. Not quite a Lolly, but I'm not seeing too much in the chest region there. She has like a kind of like a carefree, almost like childish personality as well. So that kind of adds to the Lolly vibes as well. Yeah, she's a very fun character.
And Elizabeth Daly, I feel like I've heard that name before a lot. I agree, though, that most likely if I heard that voice, which I might have, maybe when you've shown me videos of the game before, a more gravelly voice would be more appealing to me. although high-pitched voices are fine, too, but it's like probably my preference might be the more gravelly voice, but I'd have to hear it to know for sure.
Yeah, I have a feeling I would prefer the gravelly voice as well. To be fair, I don't think I've heard the voice from Heroes.
Yeah.
But I seem to recall liking her voice in the original Fire Emblem Fates. So Selkie is a character you get from basically pairing this Boxman character. By that I mean like he's a Kitsune, so he's like looks like a human man with Kitsune ears and tail. But when you like marry him off to someone, they end up having a kid, and then that kid becomes a playable unit in your army in the game.
Oh, nice.
That's one of the things I love about Fire Emblem Fates and Awakening is that child mechanic where you can pair two characters together and they have a kid. I really love that mechanic, and I want to see it return in Fire Emblem for sure.
They better return it. They better, because that's really fun.
I really like interesting and character relationships in games and anime. That's honestly characters more than even story, and definitely more than gameplay is what attracts me a lot to different games.
Oh, that's huge for me.
If something has like a very complex story, but you don't like any of the characters, for me, it's like what's the point?
And I've had that happen before too. I've been like, you know, these characters just, they aren't doing anything for me. All right, I'm just going to get through the story, I guess.
Uh-huh.
That's totally... And of course, those kinds of games, I don't really remember them very well. It's the ones with, like, the characters that are really interesting and fun. Those are the animes I remember, and the games and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. So thank you, everyone, for sending your messages. They were all wonderful.
Yes.
And your suggested topics as well. They made for... really fun and interesting discussion. So this was our first community episode. We might have more in the future. If you're interested in submitting a message or like a topic suggestion for a future community episode, feel free to send that to the CyberHex Barag. Or if you're already in contact with us on Discord, you can send it to us on Discord. Or you can post it on ATF if you're listening to this from the ATF thread. So feel free to send suggestions for stuff for us to talk about on the podcast, and it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we look forward to doing the next community episode. I think what we're looking forward to is seeing more topics wanting to be discussed and stuff. So feel free to reach out to us at any point in time.